Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the films Marlowe, Husara the Bone Woman, and To Leslie.
Three very different movies this time. In fact, they have very little in common with each other, except that they're all out right now. So that's nice. Some variety in the picture. Marlowe is the first one I'd like to talk about. And this is the latest movie from Neil Jordan. I have to say, I didn't think it was very good. And after I saw it, I started to realize that reviews have started coming out and they're pretty dismal. So Marlowe is a movie that a lot of people are not liking, although here and there, there's a critic who really thinks it's terrific. So I think it's worth talking about. It certainly has a good cast. It has Liam Neeson plays the title character, Marlowe, a private eye. Jessica Lange has a very major part in it. Diane Kruger is in it, so it has a good cast, and it's not badly acted. The trouble with it is that it's kind of an old-fashioned kind of a movie that adds really nothing new. It's not the kind of movie that I'm all that fond of to begin with, and again, I just don't think this is very well done. So, yes, Marlowe, that's a name that goes way back in private eye literature and private eye movies, and that's what we have here, played by Liam Neeson. And he is investigating a case, and it has all the ingredients that are so familiar from so many of these private eye movies over the, not only over the years, but over the decades. We have a woman comes and wants to hire Marlowe to investigate something for her, and then the next thing you know, he's involved in this big complicated case, and there's all kinds of bad people flocking around, and there's all kinds of danger, and there's all kinds of violence, and there's all kinds of this and that, but it never seems to really go anywhere. Liam Neeson is certainly a perfectly good actor, but he sort of lumbers around this movie as if he weren't all that interested in what's going on, and that certainly didn't make me interested in what was going on. It's kind of a neo-noir movie, but it's not really dark enough to be a noir. The one thing it does that's a little tiny bit different from what most movies of this kind do is that, again, it has this very sort of old-fashioned, very traditional sort of private eye movie flavor to it, but then here and there in it, there are bursts of violence which you never would have found in the old private eye movies of the 1940s and 50s. So it seems to be wanting to have a couple of different kinds of film at once here. A very old-fashioned kind of story with old-fashioned kind of characters, but a kind of newfangled violence and so forth. But don't get me wrong, it's not extreme in any of these directions. It doesn't go overboard with the old-fashioned kind of private eye movie flavor, nor does it go overboard with the violence, but it seems to want to sort of pique the audience's curiosity with both, and it just never really quite succeeds in doing either one, I'm afraid. So what you're left with, at least if you're me, is sitting back and watching this movie, which has a pretty good period atmosphere. It takes place in the 1930s. It has a slightly interesting plot, you know, if you're interested in whodunit kind of stuff, you know, you get to try to figure out what's going on. But mainly, I think you watch the acting. And the acting is good, but it is certainly not great. This is kind of surprising because Neil Jordan is not really a bad filmmaker at all. His most famous film still goes back several decades. I think The Crying Game remains the most famous film he ever made. He also made The Company of Wolves, which is a very interesting movie, also from a very, very long time ago. But I think with Marlowe, he just never really strikes any sparks. So if you really like the private eye genre, if you really like that kind of old-fashioned movie, then you might enjoy Marlowe. You might have a good time with it. You might enjoy sitting there and trying to piece out the puzzle and figure things out before the private eye hero does. But if that's not the kind of movie that automatically is going to just pull you in and hold you, then I think you can probably skip Marlowe. It's a nice try, but from a filmmaker as seasoned as Neil Jordan, I think it's a real disappointment. Our second movie today is a bit more interesting. Husara the Bone Woman. I'm probably mispronouncing that, but it's a Mexican movie. And apparently, huesera is a movie for a kind, excuse me, is a term for a kind of a folk hero, a healer. I didn't mean healer. I meant healer, who can heal broken bones. And this movie has a lot in it about folk healing, about folklore, about the powers of the mysterious, the unseen forces that swirl around us and maybe or maybe not can be brought under control, by people who have that sort of folk wisdom. So anyway, directed by Michelle Garza Cervera, this Mexican movie is about a young woman who is married, and she seems to have a pretty happy marriage to her husband, who is a very nice young man, and they want to have a baby. She especially wants to have a baby, and yes, sure enough, she gets pregnant, and then that's going to be really nice. But there's not everything nice about it. Members of her family are very skeptical. They don't think that she will make a good mother, and they're not shy about saying this. She has no maternal instincts. In fact, she's hardworking, and she has a lot of skills. She makes furniture for a living, so it's not really clear what her husband does, but he's not home a lot. But he, again, very nice man, very loyal to her, but her family, they're very skeptical of whether she'll be a good mother or not, and this brings some tension into the movie. And then things sort of start to go wrong with her body. She gets sick, and things are going wrong, and she goes to a doctor, and the doctor can't really quite figure out what's going on either, and is trying to help, and she then starts to get involved with going to the people with the folk wisdom who might be able to help her in some ways. And the movie signals this at the beginning in what I think actually is the best scene of the entire movie. It's really quite an extraordinary scene, and visually it's really quite stunning. The very beginning of the movie has the main character, whose name, by the way, is Valeria. She and some others are going to visit the Virgin of Guadalupe, which is a gigantic sculpture, holy sculpture, huge holy sculpture. And we see them going up the stairway. Some people are going up the stairway, of course, on their knees, because that's what people often do. I saw that when I was in Mexico years ago, going up on their knees to do penance and to ask for favors from the Holy Virgin. And it's an extraordinary theme. We have Valeria and her mother and her aunt, and they're going up this huge staircase to this gigantic golden statue. And what they want, what they're doing at that point is to ask, please, for a pregnancy, please, for a child. That's what they want. So it's an extraordinary scene, and it gives a very dramatic and visually striking beginning to this movie. Anyway, of course, as I've already said, the pregnancy, the prayers are answered. The pregnancy does happen. And before you know it, Valeria and her husband, Raul, they're going to have a baby. But then the family just is not really cooperating with this, and her body starts to go wrong. And then finally, we bring in the sort of the folk wisdom that comes in. So Valeria goes to see one of her relatives who has this wisdom, who does a sort of a ritual. And there's various sorts of things that go on, and things are chanted, and things are done, little things, but it doesn't really seem to do the trick. And then Valeria discovers that, yes, there is another a series of things that can be done in the way of supernatural help, but this, she is warned, will get you into some really dark stuff, and you probably don't want to go there. So, okay, Valeria is reluctant, but things keep going wrong with the pregnancy, and just there's just all kinds of problems. So she finally decides, yes, she'll have to get into this dark side. And then the movie gets darker, and the supernaturalism gets more intense and a lot more scary, and various things happen, and I certainly won't give that away, because this is a horror movie, and we're supposed to be in a lot of suspense, and it's a movie that generates a fair amount of suspense. So that is what Huesera, the Bone Woman, is all about. Now, the big thing for me about Huesera, the Bone Woman, and I think for probably a lot of other moviegoers too, is that even though it's a Mexican film and it has a lot of very distinctive elements, and there's a very powerful flavor of Mexican folklore and Mexican myth and Mexican legend that is all over the movie. Plus, these are modern people living in modern day Mexico, so there's a lot of that atmosphere as well. But the whole thing is so strongly reminiscent of one of the great classics of world cinema, which is Rosemary's Baby, the great movie of many, many decades ago, directed by Roman Polanski and starring John Cassavetes and Mia Farrow. And it is one of the great towering classics of horror film, of supernatural film. It takes place, of course, in modern-day New York City, but Sarah the Bone Woman is so reminiscent of Rosemary's Baby that the shadow of that movie sort of looms over everything that happens in Sarah the Bone Woman. So if you're familiar with Rosemary's Baby, you might find this new movie to be something of a retread. That said, it's a very, very well-done movie. It won a couple of very big prizes last year at the Tribeca Film Festival, and it has been very, very well received by critics, and it's all really very, very nice to have a Mexican movie in really major release in the United States, because we don't get enough foreign films here anymore, and we certainly don't get enough Mexican films here anymore. So on that level, also, by the way, written and directed by a woman, it's very refreshing to have this movie. So again, it's a very, very good movie, a little bit too reminiscent of a toweringly great old movie, but if you like body horror films, then Sarah the Bone Woman is almost certainly the best thing on the current scene. And our final movie today, To Leslie, which is a film which has a bit of controversy attached to it. This movie was directed by Michael Morris from a screenplay by Ryan Benaco, and it's a very, very good movie. But the controversy about it concerns its star, Andrea Riseborough, and the Academy Award nominations. To everyone's surprise, Andrea Riseborough was nominated for Best Actress. So what's wrong with that? She gives, by the way, an excellent, excellent performance in this movie. Well, it turns out that a lot of people were very upset by this because, first, it wasn't expected, so that raised the question of how did it happen, and the conventional wisdom on this, which is probably correct, is that there was a word-of-mouth campaign to get Andrea Riseborough this Oscar nomination. So, that would be no problem. This is a nice little independent movie made for a tiny amount of money, and it's very refreshing to have a movie like this, really, with a very major nomination like this in the running. But a lot of people have been upset that some of the black performers and some of the year's biggest black-oriented movies were not nominated, and then people started to say things along the lines of, who is this Andrea Riseborough? Okay, why did she get this? It's just because a lot of powerful people were lobbying for her. You have people like Gwyneth Paltrow and Charlize Theron and Kate Blanchett, who, by the way, is nominated herself, and Kate Winslet, all trying to get her this nomination. So it's all just powerful people getting their way once again. The irony of this is that, as I've already said, To Leslie is a tiny budget little movie. It's one of those little bitty indie films that normally doesn't get nominated for anything when it comes to a big award like the Academy Awards. So it's really not a case of powerful people swamping all of the more deserving contenders once again. It's really a case of an actress, Andrea Riseborough, who's been around for a long time, has been paying dues in the movie industry for decades, and who does give a superb performance here, and she's just getting some other powerful people on her side, and yes, their campaign won. So in my opinion, this controversy should not be a controversy. It's wonderful to see a little indie film get nominated for a major award like this. And by the way, the Academy Awards, in my mind, are always a bunch of power plays of one kind or another. So this is just one particular, if you want to call it a power play, one particular kind winning in this particular instance, and at least is on behalf of a tiny little indie film. So all of that said, what is To Leslie about? Well, Andrea Riseborough plays a woman who, at the very beginning of the movie, in the opening moments, wins a lottery. And she has all kinds of money now. Wow, this is fantastic. But we can tell right away that she is not a very responsible sort of adult. She is in a bar, and the first thing she does with her lottery winnings is to buy booze for everyone. And from there, for her, it's a downward path. And we don't see much of this. We then pick up with her, still at the very beginning of the movie, later on, when she has squandered all the money and become herself totally mired in a pit of alcohol and drugs. She is an addict, and she has used her winnings to fuel her addiction, and now the winnings are gone, and all that's left is the addiction, and she is in very bad shape. At the beginning of the movie, she gets together with her son, who she has not seen in years. He seems to be a responsible young man, but gee, he is fed up with the way that she goes feels about things, her total irresponsibility in life, and the next thing you know, they're split up again. She gets together with other people she hasn't seen in a long time, and they all get fed up with her as well. So basically, this movie is kind of a long string of people getting fed up with our main character, Leslie, and her trying to make her way, and finally struggling in the general direction of some sort of a halfway stable adult life. I won't tell you how the whole thing turns out. I actually found the very, very ending of the movie a little bit too optimistic for my taste. I think it sort of dragged in a little bit too much. But most of the movie is the story of a person struggling with addiction, and that woman is played superbly by Andrea Riseborough. As far as I'm concerned, not only is her Academy Award nomination justified, I hope she wins the thing, even though there are other good people in contention. And to Leslie, if you don't mind the subject matter of alcoholism and addiction and a person really struggling with those things, it's a beautifully done little independent movie made for very little money, but boy, they get a lot of high quality up there on the screen. So that is my very varied story this week.
For which we thank you, as always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus, the films Marlowe, Husara, The Bone Woman, and To Leslie.